Chapter 8. Tommy. Like brave Ulysses, sailing homeward from battle, our heroes find that powers on high have conspired to keep them lost at sea. We didn't hang out, we didn't party, we didn't stick our dicks where they didn't belong. We just flew into a city, played our asses off, and got the fuck out of there. For the first time, we were operating like a machine instead of four untamed animals. But then we started getting treated like a machine. The tour started off as this beautiful dream. We had our first number one album, which was so insanely popular that every damn song but one ended up on a single. We were on the cover of every magazine, and we had a big-ass stage show that filled dozens of trucks and went beyond anything we could have imagined when we were sitting in the Motley House setting Nikki on fire. There were 36 Marshall stacks, 36 SVT stacks, and a kick-ass flying drum set, which I'd been fantasizing about all my life. The crowds were fanatical. They knew every lyric, every chord, every downbeat off every album. And for the first time, we were sober enough to appreciate it, and married enough. We all had new wives or fiancés to whom we wanted to stay faithful. I was with Heather, Mick was engaged to Emmy, Vince had Charisse, and Nikki had proposed to Brandy, though he probably wasn't looking forward to Thanksgiving at her mother's house. Motley Crue was now four dudes in the best physical shape they'd been in since they were born. But then fall faded to winter, winter turned to spring, and spring bloomed to summer, and we were still on the road with no sign of stopping. Elektra was still releasing singles from the album, and Doug Thaler, who was managing us by himself, had us booked into tours and festivals for another year solid. After a while, it didn't matter how much bank we were making or how many weeks our album had been in the top 40. We just couldn't bring ourselves to put those leather pants on again for another night. Maybe if we were allowed to tour with cooler opening acts like Iggy Pop or Husker Du instead of being forced to bring along cheesy pop metal posers like Warrant and Whitesnake, our morale would have been better. Maybe if we had a week off sometimes, a little time in the Bahamas to veg out, we could have made it through the tour sane. But the record label was worried we'd lose our momentum. We were a money machine, and they were going to keep working us until we broke. And dude, break we did. The beginning of the end was a flying drum solo in New Haven, Connecticut. For me, it was always so crucial for people to see what I was doing when I played. In the early Motley days, I tried to use mirrors, but that never really worked. Then, before the Girls, Girls, Girls tour, I had a crazy-ass dream that I was playing drums in a cage while spinning around and gyroscoping. So, we rigged up this ghetto contraption where a forklift would take the drums to the front of the stage, and a motor would spin the drums around while I played upside down and shit. At first, I would get really dizzy, but then I remembered something I had learned in ballet lessons as a kid, and started picking a spot on the wall to stare at while spinning. On the Feel Good tour, I wanted to get even closer to the bros in the audience, so we rigged up the flying drum set, and it was all good. Until New Haven. To this day, I still don't know what happened. It began like usual. During Mick's solo, I sneaked into this long tube, stuck my feet into a strap hanging there, and wrapped my hand around a rope, which was attached to a chain motor that slowly pulled me up to the top rafters of the New Haven Coliseum. I chilled up there for a while, looking 80 feet down to scope out Mick Solo and the audience, who couldn't see me yet. Then, with a rigger named Norman holding on to me, I leapt into the air, grabbed the drums, and kicked my body around into the seat. Below, Mick shot some crazy shit out of his guitar. His stacks rumbled like they were about to explode, and then the drums appeared, whoosh, over the heads of the audience in the midst of all this really dramatic music. As the audience went out of their minds, I started hitting all these electronic pads, blam, 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 as the drums shot down toward them on 100 or so feet of invisible track. I cruised over the heads of the people on the floor, then shot to the very back of the place, so that the dudes in the full-on Stevie Wonder section all of a sudden had front-row seats. There was one dude in a jeans jacket who I swear to God shit in his pants when all of a sudden I was inches away from his face playing drums in the air. Then I spun around and the whole track adjusted so I could get back up to the top of the arena. I triggered a sample of a long descending sound, like someone jumping off a bridge. Oh! Then put my foot back in the strap, grabbed the rope that originally carried me up, and prepared to jump. It was Norman's job to pull the handbrake at the last minute, so that I'd screech to a halt like 5 feet over the heads of the crowd, and then just bounce there on this elastic rope. I liked it to look insane. None of this fucking Gene Simmons fly me over the fucking audience like Peter Pan shit. I wanted to be fully dropped, freefall style. So I sprung off the rafter. Ah! The air whipped past my face. Whoosh! And then I prepared myself mentally for Norman to pull the brake. But as I neared the ground, for some reason I inexplicably lost my trust in him. I didn't think he was going to stop me in time. So I panicked and tried to bail out. I let go of the rope and tried to get my foot out of the strap. I think the sheer exhaustion of so many back-to-back shows had dulled my senses. As soon as Norman saw me struggling to get loose, he hit the brake. Instantly, my foot, which was still in the strap, fucking stopped midair while the rest of my body continued to fall. I was just a few feet over the audience and my skull fucking smacked against the head of some dude in the audience. And then, because the rope had so much elasticity, I hit the ground headfirst and blacked out. The next thing I heard was roo, roo. I couldn't remember a thing other than the fact that something had gone wrong. What happened to me? I asked.
You just fell, buddy.
I did?
You fell on your head.
Where?
At the concert.
The concert? I need to be at my concert. I panicked. That was making no sense. I didn't remember having fallen. I just knew that I was supposed to be on stage. Not in a...
Where am I?
You're in an ambulance. We're taking you to the hospital.
But...
The show's over, buddy. Now relax. We ended up canceling a show or two while I recovered from my concussion. 3 days later, I found myself facing arena rafters and the elastic rope again. Norman pumped the brakes so that I descended really slowly, like some sort of fairy godmother instead of a rock and roll madman, and he stopped me 20 feet above the audience instead of 5. It took me a while to get over the fear. The rest of the band was thankful for the extra days off, but afterward, it was back to the never-ending roadshow. As exhaustion and insanity kicked in, our lives started to unravel. First, the chicks came marching in. Before the encore, we would marinate in a little tent in the back of the stage and suck down cold mineral water. One day, we were chilling back there when Nikki pointed out a cat litter box that was mysteriously sitting in the middle of the floor. As we were trying to figure out who was stupid enough to keep a cat backstage, we heard a loud meow. A girl came crawling toward the box on her hands and knees wearing a cat collar and a leash led by a roadie. Vince looked at me for an explanation. I looked at Nikki. Nikki looked at Mick, and Mick looked back at Vince. No one knew what was going on. The girl crawled into the cat box, hiked up her dress, peed in the sand, and then scratched at the litter until she had covered her mess. Soon, we were finding ways out of the drudgery by amusing ourselves with stupid human tricks and watching our road crew reach new lows. A whole cat theme began to develop, based around the line, "Here, kitty, kitty," from Same Old Situation. The roadies would stand in a circle and jerk off into their hands, while some poor but willing girl crawled around meowing on all fours and licking it out of their hands like milk. Nikki thought it was funny, but then again, Nikki has mother issues. What began as a clean and wholesome tour had, near the end, turned into a sick sexual circus. We were sober and had nothing else to do, so the girls became our only entertainment. Once we started looking at the girls, we noticed that they were going out of their way to get our attention, sporting leather masks with ball gags, nun outfits with holes cut to expose their tits, nurse uniforms with enema bags, skin-tight red devil costumes with dildos for horns, and cowboy outfits with cans of shaving cream in the holsters. The weak among us cracked under the pressure, choosing girls backstage who offered something they hadn't tried before. During the show, we entered the stage by being shot up in front of 25,000 to 100,000 people from a contraption underneath the stage as if we were four giant Pop-Tarts. Those contraptions eventually became a metaphor for the tour. Whenever we wanted to rest or sleep, all of a sudden someone would pull the lever and pop, there we would be, standing in front of a stadium full of cheering people ready to see the same song and dance we had been through hundreds of times already. For our whole lives, every one of us had fucking fantasized about being exactly where we were on that tour. But after 2 years, we came to hate and dread our jobs. Nikki liked to compare it to an erection. It feels great for a few minutes, but when it won't go down after hours of beating off, it starts to hurt like no other pain known to man. So we killed the pain like we always had. In Australia, Vince slipped off the wagon. After they scraped us off the floor in Australia and poured us into Japan, Nikki stumbled. And when they dragged us to Hawaii, I went to a strip club with Vince and fell victim to a big-titted waitress with a tray of Dayglow alcohol shooters and test tubes. Soon, with our relationships at home suffering from neglect, we were all sneaking alcohol, buying drugs, and reverting to our old self-destructive habits, with the possible exception of Mick, whose fiancé happened to be on the road with us as a backup singer. Near the end of the tour, Elektra sent over a film crew. They were having a massive sales conference with the buyers for all the record chains and thought that it would be a good idea for us to tape a message, sucking up to the retailers and thanking them for their support. So we gathered backstage in front of the crew, they started the cameras, and we behaved like good puppets. "Hey guys, we're Motley Crue, and we'd like to thank you for making our record number one." But then, suddenly, the puppet strings snapped. "And we want to let you know that we hate you and we hate Elektra. You guys aren't giving us a break. You're all a bunch of greedy fucking assholes, and we know where you live. And we're going to come slit your throats if you don't let us see our families." When the cameras shut off, we fucking collapsed on the floor and full-on sobbed. We couldn't even speak. We were so exhausted, so depleted, so devoid of all thought and emotion. Doug Thaler looked at us, shook his head, and said, "Maybe it's time we took you guys off the road for a little while." "Dude, you've never seen four motherfuckers split up and go their own way faster than we did.